Well, thanks for having me back, Tracy. Today, I thought I would talk a little bit in sort of general terms about, if you'll allow me to steal the title of one recent book, How Democracies Die. Last semester, we talked a lot about these sort of moments of democratic eruption or breakthrough. And today, I wanted to just sort of in general terms address some of these moments where democracy has collapsed or been rolled back or been destroyed. One could debate whether we're in a moment like that. I would argue, I think globally, we kind of are, but and I'll talk about some of those contemporary cases too, but I thought we should just ponder for a moment what some of this literature that's come out really sort of in the last 3 or 4 years. So just to give some shout outs, How Democracies Die, that book is by Stephen Levitsky and Daniel Zyblot, I think is how you say his name. The Twilight of Democracy by Anne Applebaum, that came out just, I think only a month ago or something. You know, Timothy Snyder's written that little primer on tyranny, which is a really depressing and quick read, walking you through how these things happen. There's also Finkelstein's A Brief History of Fascist Lies, and he also wrote From Fascism to Populism in History. There's another book, David Runciman, How Democracies End, that talks about this.
Light reading, right?
Some light reading. This is the stuff I was looking at this weekend and last week. How Fascism Works by Jason Stanley. And finally, The New Faces of Fascism by Enzo Traverso. So lots of people have written about this, but there's been a slew of books lately because I think we are in this moment of what many perceive, you know, political scientists, historians, sociologists, as a sort of democratic collapse or decline. I think one of the things that is hard for Americans, we tend to buy into this kind of Whiggish notion of history of progress going in one direction. But I don't think I think I'm seeing it right now. We have trouble processing mentally and emotionally that, you know, democratic systems can be reversed. I mean, those things, they can be dismantled. And one of the things that's been hardest to grasp for people, and this is really emphasized by Applebaum and How Democracies Die, is that, you know, we're in an era now where democracy is so universally accepted that dictators essentially would-be dictators have figured out how to kill it without actually destroying its form. You know, in terms of, the How Democracies Die, the warning signs it gives, these sort of four key indicators of authoritarian behavior are rejection of or weak commitment to democratic rules of the regime, and they talk a lot about this, denial of the legitimacy of political opponents, so sort of demonizing them, toleration or encouragement of violence, I'm going to try and hold back vomit, given what's happening right now, and readiness to curtail civil liberties of opponents, including media. You know, all of this literature really basically points out that to a degree that I've come to appreciate a lot living in contemporary, on this planet we live on now, the fact that a lot of what makes democracy work isn't really rules or constitutions. I mean, you know, Vargas in Brazil or Perón in Argentina or the Marcos regime in the Philippines, their constitutions were like carbon copies of ours. You know, on paper, they should have been, you know, 1 or 2 term presidents and not dictators for life, which is quasi what all three of them became. You know, democracy, those written rules are not enough. I mean, ultimately, it has to do with norms and culture and all kinds of guardrails created by kind of agreements to a certain extent between elites, but also between different factions in the political system. We accept each other as legitimate. And, you know, all of those laws and institutions can be in place. But, you know, whether it's Hungary or Poland in the last 10 years, they've just hollowed out any actual commitment to what I think any sociologist or political scientist or historian would call real democratic behavior. And it's quite terrifying. You know, in the Applebaum book, which is one of the grimmest reads, you know, she knows Poland quite well. She's written a lot about the Soviet and post-Soviet systems in Eastern Europe. She's terrified, as I am, that the pandemic is going to make things much worse. And that's clearly what's happened in Hungary. I mean, Orban passed this sort of emergency law, giving him sweeping power. Epidemics historically have tended to give more power to the state, like a lot more power. And you can argue that that's necessary on a certain level to fight the virus or bacteria or whatever you're dealing with. But governments seldom let that power go. And, you know, a lot of people, her included, are worried that we're in this moment now where the sort of global authoritarian moment has been exacerbated by, you know, the pandemic just eating away at social solidarity. And, you know, even just the machinery of elections itself has been so undermined, particularly in the American case.
After hearing everything you've just spoken about, I have 2 questions. One is maybe a bit historical and one is contemporary.
Sure, sure.
I'll go ahead and ask them both now. Number one, when a democracy fails historically, is it always replaced by something authoritarian? And number two, I think when people listen to what you've described about things that have happened in our past and conditions that have led to the downfall of democracy. I think there's probably three different ways they could take it. They could first of all say, well, I don't see the similarities. You know, I don't get the comparison you're making. Secondly, they could say, okay, the things you're talking about seem familiar to me. It seems like a lot of these things may be happening right now in the United States. But it's that third group that I'd like you to maybe address, people who say, okay, I get these similarities that you're talking about. I hear these historical comparisons, but it can't happen here. It can't happen in the United States today because... Sure. So what, you know, first of all, the historical question, and then could you just speak to that third group of listeners, yeah, maybe?
Of course. The first question first. You know, I do want to say, you know, the David Runciman book, How Democracy Ends, you know, he does point out that, you know, democracy is just one system among many, and, you know, its death doesn't necessarily mean the end of a civilization. We don't necessarily know. So, you know, I'm not going to automatically say, I mean, he just sort of cautions us against, you know, thinking this is the only way to do politics. But that being said, almost every single example I can think of when democracy died, whether it was because of external imposition, and that's happened when the Germans conquered anything and created these horrible regimes, or, you know, Vichy in France, which was sort of a collaborative thing, or because of an internal coup, you know, or what I'm going to call the sort of slow motion coup of people like Orban or Erdogan, almost invariably what you get is a more authoritarian system. I think the Southern thing, these Jim Crow era regimes were incredibly authoritarian, even if they maintained democratic norms for some people. I mean, that's certainly how apartheid South Africa worked. It was a quasi one-party state in which Afrikaners and slightly less so English-speaking whites, they were fully participating in the system and protected and privileged. But for the black majority and also so-called Asians and coloreds, as they called people of what we would call people of mixed descent, they were completely disenfranchised. So, yeah, I think almost invariably you get some form of authoritarianism, even if it's not applied to everyone, and even if it is not always obvious, because, as I said, you know, whether it's Duterte's regime or Orban's, in theory, they are no different than they were 20 years ago on paper, but they're clearly far more authoritarian in terms of the actual behavior and the consequences for who they perceive as enemies. So, unfortunately, the answer is almost always yes. Now, that may change if climate change just eats us. Some democracies, like the Netherlands and Denmark, may vanish because they're under the sea. But that's a whole nother radio broadcast in terms of what all that is going to do. In terms of that feeling that it can't happen here, and that is a very common refrain. People said it in the 30s. I heard people say it, you know, as recently as this week. I've heard people still talking that way. Well, this is America. You know, I think that is a well-meaning manifestation of this notion of American exceptionalism. That, you know, we're a city on the hill where things work differently and it can't happen here. You know, I think that's a natural impulse everybody has. You know, one thing I would point out is that is absolutely what Germans thought, many of them. So the Benjamin Carter Head book that I've mentioned a couple times that talks about the death of Weimar, one of the things that paralyzed his enemies is they just could not imagine a country like Germany that viewed itself as a country of laws, in which there was a constitution, indeed a very progressive one, in which German political behavior was well established, even if not always democratic. They could not imagine a situation, not only in which an authoritarian regime came to power, but one in which a plurality and then probably a majority of their citizens would allow them to literally be disappeared. And so many people have said that it could not happen to us. And, you know, in the case of America, what I will say to get a bit more specific is, yes, are the founders, however flawed they were, really thought about this stuff a lot, particularly Hamilton and Madison, you know, the sort of guardrails, if you will. Again, that's the Levitsky Ziblatt term they use a lot. These guardrails to prevent against authoritarianism or a would-be monarchist coming to power. You know, they did a lot of that. And I think those mechanisms have worked to a certain degree, but I think they were more dependent on norms and culture and sort of gentlemanly agreements than I think we perceived. I think to some degree the same thing, and I know I'll make some listeners mad, I think that kind of happened with Bevin a little bit. I think Bevin literally went shopping for a state in which there were few restraints on a governor's power other than cultural ones, and he just ran roughshod over all of those. However you feel about him, he was not democratically inclined in terms of his behavior. You just look at the whole impeachment process, however you feel about it. You know, the framers did not and could not imagine a situation where a would-be authoritarian, and I'm willing to die on this hill, that I think is what he is. I mean, every warning sign in all these books, you can just check them off. just like boxes, check, check, check. You know, they did not imagine a situation where half the legislature would be complicit in that authoritarianism. And our system has no answer for that. Because ultimately our system, you know, rules only mean something if they're enforced. I would say the same thing about the Hatch Act, which I know most Americans don't even know what that is, but this, you know, these laws that prevent using your office to get your office again and to maintain power. Thousands of Hatch Act violations were committed a couple of weeks ago at that convention. I mean, a stunning amount. Literally everyone that worked on the convention broke federal law. But if nobody is willing to enforce that law, it becomes meaningless. You know, I still heard people saying like, oh, well, as bad as it is, you know, that couldn't happen here because we have this law and that law. And I'm not sure any of that matters. Laws are not the hand of God, some sort of external force that imposes its will. I mean, it's, you know, what are people willing to do and able to do and what can they get away with? And I think we're learning that all over again. I mean, democracy is not a thing. It's not like a monument. It's a process. It's, you know, a living, breathing, and I think right now maybe dying thing that if you don't fight for it and maintain it literally every day, no amount of paper or precedent or hoary institutions will stop it.